Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. Ever wondered what it's like to play sheriff in the email wild west of a big company? Enter Lola Gandera, Jones Lang LaSalle's first ever deliverability expert. And because Jones Lang LaSalle might become a bit of a mouthful and because of how much email people love an acronym, we're going to use JLL for short. She has been putting out fires, laying down the email law, and making sure JLL's messages aren't just shouting into the void. So whether you're listening for the juicy insider stories, the hot takes, or just to figure out how to tame your own wild email program, we've got a treat for you today. Lola, welcome to Email After Hours.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you. We're so stoked about the conversation that we're going to be having today. But before we jump into that, Lola, over the recent episodes of Email After Hours, we seem to have developed a bit of a musical theme. And so we're keen to run that by you and say that thinking about your day job, which we're going to be talking about more in just a moment, if you had to compare your day to day at JLL to a famous song, what would it be and why?
One song? Because there's multiple songs.
Oh, you can have more than one. That's absolutely fine.
And aren't all songs about email? No, just kidding. I think some of the favorites would have been Mr. Postman, please, Mr. Postman, or Return to Sender, right? But like from my day to day, there's this song by Van Halen called Right Now, because everything has to be right now. Why are we going to wait? It's needed now. I feel that kind of resonates with me a lot. There is a rap song called Blocked. But I don't sing that very much. So yeah, so those kind of come to mind. Maybe even Singing in the Rain because I'm in Florida and you could still be happy playing the part. So yeah.
I'm kind of the age that I'm delighted you chose a Van Halen number, but I'm glad it wasn't Running from the Devil.
On occasion, very rare, but on occasion, yeah.
Tell us more.
This is becoming my favorite question now. I'm so eager to hear just what everybody's perspective of this song is really going to be. We'll really get a sense for how everybody's feeling in the email world right at the top with that. But Lola, just give us a quick rundown of JLL's email program. Like, who are you sending to and what are your biggest challenges when reaching them?
Well, first of all, you know, JLL is a huge conglomerate in real estate, right? They cover almost every, if not almost every aspect of real estate, from buying buildings, building buildings, filling them up with tenants, managing the properties, loans, finance, you name it, they do it. So when you ask about our email program, well, it runs the gamut, probably touches every area that we're in one way or another. And we have lots of people send an email. So we try to reach investors. We try to reach the regular Joe that's trying to buy a home because we do that as well. We reach professionals. We have clients that are in various different industries. It's pretty varied when you think about our email marketing program, which can present a challenge, right? Trying to keep everybody in check. But, you know, for the most part, they listen.
Hopefully. Yeah, let's dig into that. Because as you say, you know, you're this huge business and lots of people in your business sending email. And yet, nonetheless, you are JLL's first ever in-house deliverability expert. So what were they doing before you? Were they winging the deliverability piece?
I wouldn't say they were winging it. I think they just, you know, brought somebody in-house. And more than likely, I'm sure they were getting help from our ESPs, and everybody thinks that they know deliverability until they realize, well, hey, maybe I don't. And, you know, it also has a lot to do with the industry. I've been in email for a bit. I think it's been the early 2000s, right? And you've seen this all grow and evolve. And I was kind of even shocked when I started to see where, you know, you had these specific deliverability roles now at companies. But way back when, everybody would kind of pitch in and do their part. And I still think we have a lot of folks that think that email is just a very simple thing. You put content together, you get a list, hit send, and there it goes. And hey, it's in the inbox. And you know, we know that's not necessarily the case. There's a lot more involved. And as email has evolved, trying to, you know, stay away from spammers or junk coming in, we have all these rules that we have to follow. So I think at some point they just decided we need somebody in-house that can help us with governance and establish those best practices and monitor. And of course, it helps having great tools like Everest to do our job. So I wouldn't say they were winging it, but I think it gets to the point where you realize you need somebody that can actually help guide everyone in the right direction and help them understand the difference between delivery and deliverability, right?
It can certainly be a bit of a beast. I applaud JLL for having that realization and pulling you in. What a smart decision on their part.
I presume that guidance must also involve an element of standardization as well, because when you've got so many people sending emails, you've got to have some rules and some buffers to stop it from turning into the Wild West. So can you give us a sense of sort of, you know, one or two of those standardizations that you've tried to introduce so far?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, it can be kind of like the Wild West, especially with so many people wanting to hit, you know, send. And I think, you know, we've come down to just making sure that they have the right audience, right? A lot of times they just kind of like a set it and forget it. Like, oh, this is the list that I use all the time, but nobody's really kind of curating that list to really make sure that they're really the recipients you want for a specific deal or a specific property or what have you. So I think, you know, that has been the main thing, helping them look at metrics that really impact their inbox placement, mostly being bounce backs and complaints. Thankfully, our unsubscribe rates, I think, are fairly low. But looking at these other metrics, not just the typical ones that we've been programmed to look at when it comes to email opens and clicks, and I'm sure we'll get to that at some point. So I think their monitoring of these deliverability metrics have helped them understand how to tweak their audiences to get a better performance, right?
And Guy was talking about standardization, but then of course there is personalization too. And you've mentioned that there are many different types of audience groups and presumably many different kinds of personas involved in your email program. So given that variety, how are you personalizing these messages?
From my role, I'm probably not as involved as I want to be with their day-to-day, but we definitely recommend that they leverage a lot of the data to better personalize. So it's more than just, right, you know, hey, John, it's really understanding when it comes to a lot of our business lines, whether it's an investor, right, or a customer that's looking for design ideas, that content speak to them, that it pertains to them, that, you know, there's data backing up why they're involved. Because the last thing we want to do is inundate their mailboxes with deals that just are not up their alley. You know what I'm saying? That is the biggest, not only recommendation, sometimes it's a challenge because sometimes they may not have all the data that they'd like, but that's where we go for the personalization, just leveraging data that helps us see the relevancy of a particular email content for that audience.
And that's a real challenge for you, isn't it? Because typically, you know, one of your subscribers is not necessarily going to be in the market to buy commercial real estate every day. And I think when we were preparing for today's conversation, you made a memorable comment where you're saying, listen, it's not like we're in the business of selling t-shirts or something fast-moving commercial goods like that. And how do you keep your subscribers interested from day to day and week to week until they next are in the market for another transaction?
It's so funny because as I came into this role, not that we don't, you know, kind of all have some idea about real estate, but sometimes you're like the big boys, right? You know, talking about they're buying industrial buildings or commercial buildings. So it's a little bit outside of, you know, my acquisition power. But it also helped me understand how people relate to the communications coming from this space, right? So at first, my jaw was on the floor. I go, how many emails do you send a person a day? Right. And then I realized this is just the way they do business. They're very accustomed to getting a slew of emails. And it doesn't increase the unsubscribe rate or it doesn't increase the complaint rate. You may not see it from an engagement perspective, but that doesn't mean that they're not reading it. And so we all have this idea, right? If you're in retail, it's a totally different story. And so it really is par for the course. It's like, this is how this industry works. And so don't be so surprised. And that's where, you know, I'm learning being in this role from them, right? So what do you mean? This is what we always do. And this is what we're used to doing. Now, does that need to change? You know, maybe eventually something will turn. But things that, like I said, that I thought were like outrageous work just perfectly fine here. And then I also start to think a little bit about where we are as deliverability experts in the space, or having been in the space for a while. I don't want to call myself an expert. I realize I don't know anything. Is that how well of a job have we done, really, right? How much has, you know, email has evolved. We talk about how it's evolved so much. But at the same time, some things have really remained the same. The fact that a lot of people don't understand deliverability yet, and it's been around for a while, does that say anything about us that are out there, you know, evangelizing about deliverability? How did we not get that message out far enough, right? So just things that happen that you think about. Are they just too busy to be listening to podcasts or going to webinars? I don't know. But it just begs that question. Right. Everything's a little bit different. We tend to think that it's one way, but all of a sudden something from left field shows you it could be a totally different. So it's not as boring as we think email is. Email is pretty
boring. Surprising. I don't think anybody thinks email is boring. How good.
It's definitely not boring.
It's here for the long term, right?
And I think it was so interesting listening to you describe like the differences with your industry and others and sort of what normal or average might look like. And I really do think it's all about the data, right? Like, what is the data telling us? What are our subscribers telling us? And on that note, we touched on metrics a little bit. I was thrilled to hear you mention bounce rates, complaint rates as some of those metrics that you are looking at. And beyond the open, which, let's face it, is a dated and perhaps unreliable metric at this point, what KPI really gets you excited?
Oh, I'm a big fan of the bounce back.
Okay, tell us more.
And you said data, and I just really do think that there's a lot of information that could be leveraged there, right? A lot of times we just go, it's either hard or it's soft. Yeah, hard, just throw it out the window, soft, it'll fix itself. And then you realize that not so much with the soft, right? And by the way, not everybody follows, you know, the same bounce, you know, protocols. Sometimes you get somebody bouncing you as a soft when it should be a hard, or a hard when it should be a soft. And so there's a lot there. And, you know, you start to dig into it. Sometimes you are getting into the weeds, but it is what it is. And you realize that there's more information. Hey, how come I'm not reaching this intended recipient? Well, you know what? They didn't add you as a trusted sender. So, you know, you're going to want to go down that route. And if this company, this domain is important to you, then you're moving in that direction. So there's that. If there's any issues on your side, right? Hey, authentication's failing. Well, why is it failing? Why are they seeing you as a relay? What is happening there? Where do you have to take action? Get your power back, fix the situation so that you can reach those people. Because let's face it, we acquired them for a reason. They're on our list for a reason, right? We're not just going to let them go. So I like that bounce back because it's just very telling. And I think it's quite helpful for our users to understand, you know, what issues are out there. It's not as easy as, oh, I got this list. I'm going to send to them. They should have gotten, but it should be in their inbox. And, you know, not always the case. And as you were saying, now with security scanners, mail filters, you know, everybody trying to keep the junk out, sometimes the good guys get caught in those same snares, right? Not that they don't need to get in, but that's what happens.
I feel like this is one of those moments where I realize just how much we need to get Guy, all of our past podcast guests in a room to wax on about standardizing bounce codes and bounce rates.
I feel like you, freshly back from morgue last week, probably heard a lot of those conversations last week.
That's right.
Yeah, it is one of those that I, as I was sifting through bounce reasons this week, I was like, oh my gosh, can they just not get together and kind of figure out what code is what? I mean, seriously, on occasion you find yourself having to Google, well, what's this person say? You know, what's this entity, this ESP, this mailbox provider use this code for? And I'm like, oh, okay, that's quite different.
It's quite niche, isn't this? I mean, do you ever have those situations where you've got friends or family around for dinner and you get to that, so what do you do for a living part of the conversation? And trying to explain to them about how you sort of sift through bounce codes to decipher why emails don't work. And surely you get to a point of the evening where their eyes just start to glaze over.
Like, oh, you poor thing.
I can't imagine why nobody would have caught on to this deliverability game. To your
Oh, that's funny.
I wanted to dig back to this idea that some of your subscribers have potentially many, many JLL emails sitting in their inbox, and you're saying that their response to them is pretty benign. But do you not ever have a mental picture of them lining them all up and doing a mass select so they can generate a huge revenge spam complaint against you? Or, you know, do you feel it's more like you know, it's just front of keeping yourself front of mind, and that, you know, when they are in that moment that they're ready to engage, they will?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm sure that we've had one or two out there, just haters. They're just haters, right? I'm sure that some of them might even been competitors. So, and that's the other one. I've never seen so many competitors get on others' lists so quickly, but yeah, you have a little bit about that, understanding cadence. And I think you touched on it, Danielle. You know, it's really about the data, understanding your data, when's too much, setting that cadence. You have to really be immersed in understanding how your audience engages with you. It's not always going to be through email. So are you capturing all of that? Are you leveraging that data to best understand when to stop communicating so that you don't have people jumping off sooner than you'd like? But I think, you know, again, this is a little bit different from what I'm used to. You would have been slapping people's hands already. It's like, that's too much email. But in this case, not so much. Maybe it's just the industry, the nature of the beast here. It just acts so different. Like I said, not that we don't get complaints. I think everybody gets complaints. There's complainers in the world. That's just what it is. But nothing to where, you know, we're feeling the detriment of that.
In calls before today's recording, you mentioned that JLL sometimes sends emails with like epically long subject lines. And naturally, we want to make sure that our subject lines like at least are concise enough to be seen in full. So I've got kind of a two-part question for you here. One, give us your best tip for maybe trimming the fat from that subject line or maybe even email content. And then two, can we have an example of maybe JLL's one of their best or worst subject lines ever, in your opinion?
Gosh, I wish I could give you an example. I can't tell you that, yes, it's one of those other ones where like, you, this is your subject line, you're going with this. And then I realized, again, kind of going back to what I was saying, you know, this industry is a little different. Like what kind of, you know, how are you going to write that subject line when you're talking about industrial space, right? Maybe I, as an investor, am looking for that 120,000 square foot, you know, warehouse. I don't care where it's at. So what might feel so odd to me, and I'm like, well, is this supposed to get them to open? Right? And in actuality, they do. Why are they too cryptic? In the beginning, I used to think so. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. Now, mind you, it may be different for other mailings, like, you know, a research paper, because we do a lot of that, or it might be design. And I think, yes, in that case, there are ways to trim the fat and to be a little bit more strategic with your subject line. And it's, to me, always been, we'll test, right? What is the one that's going to really get them to open? Well, we're not going to stay away from the open, but to really engage, right? To get them to convert, right? Whatever that conversion might mean to you. So I can't say that I have any specific examples. There were some eye openers. Again, it was really just kind of like, what's that supposed to mean to me? But I wasn't the investor. So maybe if I was, it would have been, that's the one I'm going to open. So yeah, trimming the fat, I'd say just something that's just very, you know, attention grabbing. Of course, that's very broad. It's knowing your audience and how to speak to them, I guess, is the key there.
Now, that's external audience. But let's also talk about internal audience, because you were telling us about the dashboard that you've introduced to educate others in your company about the importance of deliverability. And I think also maybe to hold your various teams accountable to each other when it comes to deliverability. So what's in the dashboard and how is it helping to shape your email performance?
Well, I think, and thanks for reminding me, yes, most definitely found that they didn't have much information when it came to how their campaigns were performing outside the typical, right? Like, what does this mean to you? Knowing what your delivery rate is, understanding the various mail streams, like I said, lots of different areas. We, instead of calling it a mail stream, we'll call them email groups, right? How do they perform, right? So definitely showing them delivery rates, totally different from inbox placement for sure. And we'll get there. There is a lot of that in there. But helping them understand bounce back rates, like I said, is another key one. So how do they perform from an email group perspective? How do they deliver? What are the bounce back rates? Complaint rates, spam trap hits, right? So here now we're digging into that data, breaking it out by regions. We're very much B2B, but we also do B2C. So, hey, based on your active subscriber base, right? How are you delivering to those specific ISPs and mailbox providers? What are your biggest challenges? How do you overcome those challenges, right? What does this mean to you? What's the trend? Are your bounce backs going up? Are they going down? Are they staying flat? Like, where are you going? And then I also have introduced most recently contact growth, right? Their contact database. Is it growing? And how is it growing? Where are your data sources? Where are you acquiring the most of your subscriber base? And then how do they perform in those metrics of bounce backs, right? Of complaints, right? Are there any data sources you should be concerned with? The ones that, you know, and sometimes just because of the nature of the business, a lot of them may come through imports, right? Because they're either at webinars, some conference, right? So how do they perform as those that are coming through a web form or a, you know, website visit or what have you? And I think that has been very, very instrumental to various users. And again, as you've mentioned, we have multiple instances that are divided either by a business line or a region. So, you know, we have APAC in Americas, EMEA, our capital markets groups, what have you. And they all do business slightly different. Sure, we're all doing email, but it is always with a different flavor, right? So I try to paint that data in a light that they can understand. A lot of definitions there, right? Again, the distinction between delivery and deliverability. What is a spam trap? And I can say, thankfully, as a company, we do not hit a large number of spam traps, which, you know, is like, you know, yeah, it is a bravo. It is most definitely a bravo compared to some of the things that I've seen in my career. Yeah, this is a big one. So, but when they do hit them, I'm like, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no, that task. So they've liked it. I think a lot of people, I've gotten a lot of questions about it. People have immediately reacted, especially if they've identified, you know, if I've gone ahead and identified campaigns that fell out of that kind of like recommended threshold, go review, you know, your segments, go review your audience criteria, look at the content, right? Look at these different things that might have caused that campaign to perform a little bit outside of what we would want. And I think that has been helpful when you can point them in the right direction and help them solve for the next time.
Gosh, though, I feel like you could teach deliverability 101. I mean, seriously, you're asking all of the right questions here and pointing everybody in the right direction. But we know that not all of your challenges are necessarily email specific. Some are much broader and more to do with maybe the people using the technology and not the technology itself. Can you give us some insight into that?
Absolutely. Like I said, we do have lots of users, all flavors, right? People that may understand email marketing and some that may not, right? And so I think that's a big hurdle, right? When you're trying to get everybody to kind of follow certain paths, some may just be on a mission. I'm just going to do point 1 through 5 and that's what I'm doing. I'm not asking any questions along the way. So you have a little bit about that. I don't think they understand what's happening also in the space. And so that makes it a challenge, especially if they don't have time to read all this wonderful stuff that we're sending their way. So Yeah, I think my biggest hurdle is the various flavors of users in the system. And we also have so many programs going on simultaneously, right? So how do they all work together? And I have a contact that is present in various instances. And so to them, right. It's, you know, they're oblivious. The recipient, the contact is oblivious to the fact that, you know, the way we operate across multiple instances, they just see it as one JLL, as do we, right? And we do our best to make sure that all of those instances are aligned. But being able to have that very holistic view of who your contact is and understanding how they're engaging across multiple instances, I think that's another one that's a challenge, sometimes outside of my scope, but it all kind of ties together, right? We're all so
it can all come back to bite that deliverability. That's for sure.
It's all interlaced. And so you don't know what's going to come your way. It keeps you on your toes.
It does. This has been such a good conversation. And I mean, it's been lovely having it with you, but it's been so interesting listening to it as well. And with Danielle, I love your deep focus on the metrics. I love the idea that you're looking to bring your internal users along with you by educating them and explaining the benefits of doing it right. It's such a good story. But unfortunately, we're going to have to start wrapping up. And we usually like to finish with one or two quick fire questions. And I think, Lola, sticking with the deliverability theme, do you think there's anything coming up on the horizon deliverability-wise, which is worth keeping our eyes on and which you're busy prepping all of your JLL internal users so that they're ready to survive it when it arrives?
Yeah, there is. This is a really good one. But first, I want to say that I think it has also helped me tremendously. I'm going to plug Everest once again. Really is a great tool. It's helped me tremendously, just helps me. And, you know, it's my eyes into the world, right? So I think that is, it's great to have those tools available in your arsenal to get through all this other stuff. But yes.
Thank you.
Guy, absolutely. It's increasingly getting very difficult to understand engagement, right? We no longer have what we used to have, you know, to kind of best understand that and just making it harder for marketers, right? And email marketers to understand how their campaigns can be performing. So that's the one thing. And so when you have to tell them, listen, you just have to be, it's going to take a little bit more, but you have to understand what's happening outside after you hit send. Let's say it landed. And so what they clicked, what does that mean to you? How does that translate? And do you have your tentacles in those places to best understand what that click or that open, even though we don't mention opens very much anymore, means to you, right? You don't know how they're engaging. Everything is hidden. You don't know, you know, they've masked that email. You don't know who's who. And as much as we want and as much as we try. So I think they have to just get smarter is how they're going to measure that outside of this little thing that comes into your inbox, which we call email.
Your answer makes me so happy and for like even in a temporary way for those people who maybe don't know about everything that's happening in the email marketing system. Can you imagine being like, oh my gosh, everybody open my email. Everybody loves it. And just having an awesome day. Anyway, thank you. That's so
you don't
great.
Want to be the one to burst the bubble, right? It's like, yeah, about that open rate. Even the click. That's just the thing. That was a great last question. I'm glad you asked it. I'm hoping that everybody is looking for ways to really measure engagement outside email. Email's the conduit, but you got to keep your eye on what's happening outside of that space too.
Thank you so much, Lola, for joining us today. And next time, of course, Guy and I are coming to you with more great content. We will be having Adam Perslow on the podcast from The Loyalty Co., where, you might have guessed it, he will be talking to us about loyalty programs. So make sure to come back. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Yeah.
Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours and see you next time.